Hello, everyone. My name is Nick Gregory, and I'm CEO and founder of the Wealth Engineering family of companies. And I'll be hosting today's PowerCast as the latest addition to our Wealth Engineering Fusion Power series. Now, we'll be taking a Reader's Digest approach to a very expansive topic as we discuss turning your unique investment strategy into an ETF ticker on a turnkey basis. Our special guest today is Dan Moore. Dan is CEO and founder of ETF Create, as well as several other wealth advisory organizations. ETF Create is one of the latest additions to my organization's expert sourcing consortium. So let me start out by asking you, Dan, your background and the dynamics of how you and your team engineered such a robust turnkey ETF implementation platform for the wealth advisory community.
Yeah, great. And great to be with you, Nick. Thanks for having me. So I got into this space. I think you probably have kind of heard a story like this where I kind of tripped into it. It's not what I really set out to do.
The evolution of business.
Yeah. And I really started my financial career in the retirement plan space. So more geared towards 401ks, just as a broad way to kind of say it. And I loved it. I was I really loved being in that space. I loved what could be done in that space, but it started to become a space where everything got hyper focused on, and I know this is going to shock everyone, but got focused on lower fees, one type of passive investment. And that's all anybody was talking about in our industry for a long period of time. When I knew that if you could take a 401k plan and utilize it well, it could be a really powerful tool well beyond those
Absolutely.
Limited focuses.
Better the
right?
commodity that it's become.
Exactly.
Using the various tools, age-weighted,
yep.
And
oh.
Oh, just a lot of design tools that
it's
exist.
It's incredible. And so I was in the industry. I was what I would call a pretty strong specialist in the industry. And I guess the best way to say it is I got a little disillusioned with the industry. And I had that movie with Tom Cruise and Jerry Maguire. I think it was, and where he has like a moment. I'm gonna go do it the right way.
Yeah.
Had that moment, and it wasn't quite as dramatic, but I left, my corporate, good paying job, stable. I was, well respected, all the good stuff, and said I can go do this differently, in a way that's really good. And so I created a company called Retireful, and the concept behind Retireful was really that you can have it was like six or seven different ways to have a successful retirement plan. And it would be something like meaningful employee education, thoughtful plan design, which you kind of mentioned earlier with some age-weighted stuff, insightful investment analysis, right? So it was the full playing on the full term. And I had seven things that if you did correctly, not just one, not low cost passive investing. If you could do seven things inside your 401k plan, you would have a successful 401k plan. And I built a whole marketing concept around it. It was really cool. It was one of my favorite things I've ever done. And I went out, said, I can do this. And it was kind of this hybrid. Maybe I'll be an advisor and do this myself, or maybe I'll be the consultant to advisors and provide all the material. And fast forward a little bit, it kind of landed with a thud. People just,
okay, so
whatever.
You kept evolving and wound up
yeah.
in the ETF space.
Yeah, well, so I realized then, oh, this isn't probably gonna be something that's gonna work for me. In the meantime, I was networking, doing these things, and I met this person who, this firm really, who does active investment management through their technology. And I was fascinated by it because all we had been hearing for years is that the only thing that really works is passive, just low cost passive, low cost passive. So when I met this group, I saw that they were legitimately could do active management. And so I started just kind of reaching out to a couple advisors that I had, I had been in that world forever and almost instantly signed up like a couple for this firm. And I was like, well, this is what I'm going to do now. I'm going to start finding advisors who want a different story, who want a more active management, and help sign them up to this firm. So I became an independent contractor for that firm. And over the course of about 18 months, brought in about 1.2 billion of AUM for them. So it was pretty remarkably successful. And they would run, strategy sending signals to advisors building their unique portfolios. So I got to the point where I was like, I wish I could make this more accessible, but I don't know how to do that. And so just through this, again, this is the tripping part where I was just trying to find a totally different solution. I happened across somebody who said, "Have you ever considered creating an ETF?" To which I said, "There's no way I could ever do that." This was 6 years ago. And he was like, "No, we can do it with you. You've got the right base and we can make it work." And they led me through the process at a unbelievably low cost because they knew that the strategy worked and the AUM was there. Two lessons I learned and I still take to today. And so we went through the process and created three ETFs all at once. And what I did is I took those ETFs and made them into portfolios for the people I was currently working with who wanted access to it in a different way. And it was great. It worked out perfectly well. And we were very active strategy. So that was great. And we could talk about in a bit. And so I got into the ETF world. At that point, I wasn't doing my own trading because I didn't really know what that even meant inside an ETF. But as I got a handle on that over a couple of years, I built out all the infrastructure that was required to do my own trading and started taking that on. Learned it really well. There was definitely a steep learning curve for that, but we learned it, got really good at it, and decided through our the trust that we work with that you need for an ETF. They started coming to us saying, "Hey, we're launching a new ETF. Would you be our sub-advisor and do the trading and also be a legit sub-advisor where you can help the advisor who's never done this before, much like you hadn't done it 3 or 4 years ago at this point, or 2 or 3 years ago?" So I said yes. And at that point, I started bringing on what you would call I was the sub-advised trader for now three ETFs on my own. And so we built the infrastructure. We did it through our own ETFs, our own experience. We kind of got the learning curve through our own pain points on our own stuff. And then, like I said, got really good at it and decided to make it available to other people. And quite frankly, it's something that as we've gotten into, I've really loved doing because I get to see other people's strategy, which I always find super fascinating. We get to help provide a real solution to people. And it's been fun to expand into other people's into what they're doing. So that's kind of how I got into this world. It was far from planned out and perfectly executed by any stretch.
Yeah, interesting. Well, as you know, and many of the advisors that are on, that will be listening in are aware, there's a real a lot of pent-up energy out there relevant to advisory firms that we consult with in establishing a static and their own ETFs. And so I've spent the last 2 years going through due diligence with several firms, and it's amazing how much variance there is in pricing structure and what they say they do and what they're going to do and so on. And it's been a frustrating due diligence approach. And then you and I got together, and Comfort evolved quickly, and you helped me understand how the fee structures can vary so much for a reason. There's a whole lot of fluff in there. And so I'm excited about as we formalize our relationship, I'm excited about introducing you into our community. And of course, you'll be at our conference coming up here at the end of September. Now, can you drill down a little bit deeper relevant to what are the in creating a turnkey platform? What should an advisor be looking for, and what are the what's the details? So, are they covering the legal work and regulatory filings and the launching, making sure the platform is ready to launch and having a separate website or separate websites, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
Walk through that.
there, there's a d definitely a lot that goes into it. When I launched 5, 6 years ago now, it was a very different game, and I had people telling me, you almost can't do this, it won't work, and your expense ratio is going to be too high and this and that. And I didn't believe it them to be right at the time, luckily, because they weren't. But the amazing thing that's happened since that point is how many active advisors have gotten into the space to normalize that now in the ETF world, which when I launched, it was still viewed as a passive low-cost vehicle for large institutions that are basically indexing. That's not true today. There's thousands of ETFs launched a year. They're almost all active. I shouldn't say almost all, but a lot of them are actively managed ETFs at the advisor level, looking for the advantages that an ETF wrapper gives you. And so there are many ways for a firm like mine to operate, just like there is almost any firm, different models. Our model is how I got into this space. I try to duplicate it, which is if we talk to an advisor and they have, I don't judge their strategy too much. That's not my job, I don't believe. But if it's a strategy I think that can fit well into an ETF, and most importantly, they have access to AUM, because something you and I have discussed in the past is that, look, I don't help people raise money for ETFs. It's impossibly hard to do. And any firm that's ever promised it, I have my own ETFs. I've had every firm that anybody else would go look at, I've looked at. And they make these promises about helping to raise assets. And if you dig a little bit deeper, which is fascinating to me, many of these firms have their own ETFs with very low AUM. And so I sit there and think to myself, how do you not have more AUM in your own ETF telling me you're going to raise AUM into my ETF? And so there's a real disconnect there, for one.
Exactly.
So I'm very upfront. I do not help raise money inside ETF. That's got to be the advisor's role. They've got to have access to it. To me, that's the most singularly most important thing you can have to have a successful ETF, is that initial seed. And some reliability within the first 6 to 12 months, you're going to have legitimate AUM, which I would define as somewhere between $20 million-$30 million at seed, and then get to 50 million as quickly as possible. That's as simple as I can make it. And I think that's very true. And so that's my filter, a couple other things for sure. But if that works out, then I want to do everything I can to provide a frictionless opportunity for launch, which means I don't charge upfront money, any consultation fees, any work that we're putting into helping launch. There's really one fee in the beginning, and it's to pay the attorneys to create the ADV and the website developer. And every ETF has to have a unique website that's very functional for bringing in data every day. So unfortunately, you can't go to Wix or something like that and say, "Well, I have a good website already. I love it." You probably do, but it's got to be a unique website dedicated to that fund that has a lot of functionality behind it, which we won't go down that rabbit hole. But those are the two costs to launch, and that generally, I think on my website I say be prepared for $50,000 of upfront. It's actually probably closer to $35,000, but I want to be a little bit on the high side there. But it's not generally a prohibitive amount of money. When I launched, had I not found these other the guys I work with still today, at that time, and you and I still have seen quotes of as high as six figures just to
It's
launch.
$400,000. I've seen it.
I've seen those numbers. I've seen them
Yeah,
myself.
it's
And so
ridiculous.
it's
And what do you
incredible.
know?
And it doesn't make sense to me, because what we want is a successful launch to then have a successful ETF. And I think just the friction of fees isn't necessary right there, because this should be an ongoing long-term relationship. And it's been, to me, it makes sense to do it that way. And so those are the, like the regulatory stuff. That stuff is, I don't want to say it's templated, but it's kind of templated, meaning that we can like, we've got that down. We can get you up and running on those regulatory filings really quickly. We know how to fill those out, so you're both not too broad, but not too specific, like most things you would do. So you have a little bit of runway with your strategy. Because I will say this, not only in our own strategies, but every strategy we've launched since has changed. I wouldn't say materially, but a little bit to kind of accommodate the uniqueness of an ETF. So we don't want to make things too strict in what we write in our ADV or our prospectus or anything like that. So at any rate, more to the point, we can help make that really good and that not constraining.
And you're trying to provide as much flux and balance as possible
Yeah, we
in your
really do.
initial design, instead of it being so strenuous that
Yeah. Well,
12 months later you're in trouble.
because what happens is, and I get it, like
We
you have a strategy, like, oh, I can define this really well, and that's great. But we just help you say, well, look, when you have it documented, it's a little different story. Anyway, so we get you through that. I think you kind of mentioned it. We mentioned it, 4 to 6 months is the general time frame, and that's a regulatory timeline, not really ours. Once you really have submit everything, there's a 75-day window that you cannot be done before that 75-day window. Meaning, when the 75-day window expires, you can launch the next day, but you can never launch before that. So there's just this window the SEC provides that says that they're going to check everything out. And so, and by the time you create everything, go through that window, and have a realistic launch date, it's generally 4 to 6 months, but and that's a pretty good time frame. And at that point, we do a ton to help you get set up successfully. As importantly, then, that I think we're pretty unique in, and like we really legitimately do this part, is that we take on a lot of the advisor role for like the first 18 months, meaning like we'll do a lot of the work on like the admin work on your behalf. Because at that time, what we want you to focus on is really the two most important things you can do as the advisor. Make sure your investment strategy is what you want it to be and working, and that you're getting AUM. You don't need to be burdened with the regulatory. I mean, you have to do some of those things, but we'll get it all set up and prepared for you. And what I found, and then we obviously then we do the trading, which is super unique and requires legitimate infrastructure to do in an ETF. So I find that after 18 months is a generally good time frame to say, okay, we can kind of revisit this. We've had some breathing room. You've gotten used to this world. Would you like us to continue some of these services, or would you like us to kind of strip down to be more of just a, so would you like us, I think of it as, would you like us to continue to be more of a sub-advisor, or would you like us to become now more of a trader? Now we're in the beginning, we're doing both. And so, to this point, my three outside ETFs are all like, we like the sub-advise service you provide, because we're taking a lot of stuff off your plate. But there's definitely possible that someone would say, hey, we can start to take some of that on, we'll do it now, and that's your reduction in fees and things like that come along with it. But the whole business model is, let's get up and running for the first 18, 24 months, really get your feet wet, really get you in this game. It's different, like most things, there's a learning curve. And then we can talk about what it looks like, but we want to be there side by side in the beginning for sure.
So you're creating a turnkey path. You've created the facilities that surround you to get things done, because I know you're not legal counsel, you're not a trust company, and so on. And then you can maintain the foundation that you've built, assist in maintaining the foundation that you've built with that firm, making sure they don't skip too many steps relevant to. You got to maintain this.
Got to maintain
You
it.
have the SEC looking over your shoulder.
Oh, for sure. And I think turnkey is a good word, but I would sharpen that just a bit and say some of our competitors are truly turnkey. They do everything in-house. We
That's why
could
they
do
maybe with
that.
that's why they charge so much.
And that's why they charge so much. And so
$400,000 versus 50. How's that work?
And what and and they're So yes, there's that model where they do that and they do stuff in-house. And so some of that is a little deceivingly high because they're doing some of the work, but it's actually in a way not either. So that's what's kind of strange. But what I would say is that what I have built out is working with in kind of each area, there could be admin, a different type of admin than what I would do. There's the trust, there's custodians, there's prime broker. There's lots of moving parts. We have one or two or three in each of those areas that we can work with web host and say, what's the best fit for you? And we connect everybody. And then we're kind of in the middle of all those spokes and say, hey, we will manage this part of it, keeping everyone connected and making sure they're doing what they're doing. But what I have found is that when everything is in-house and turnkey, that can be okay. I'm not against that model, but sometimes that when something goes wrong, there's a hesitancy to be accountable for the total organization is doing everything. And so we like to be able to have putting the parts together that fit reasonably for what they're doing. For instance, we have a strategy that does options, covered calls. Well, that's very different than another strategy we do that's more that doesn't do it. And people manage that differently with different vendors. And so if you have one vendor doing everything, they don't always work the best for each strategy. So we really take it on ourselves to find the right fit for everybody at that point. And then we kind of build it together and then we manage alongside with those relationships. And so that helps us stay lean because we're not bloated. We can also do a good job of negotiating fees with vendors. We've done a great job of that. And we're just making sure everything is pretty lean and everybody, we work with people who have a mentality similar to us, which is we want to get you to a successful launch. We're not going to burden you with upfront fees. We're not going to make it prohibitive. Because look, the way I think about it, Nick, is forever we've had a vehicle for wealth managers to deploy their investment strategy, which is called an SMA, right? And it's kind of been the only way you could do it. Not really, but it's in some ways, it's the only way you could do it. And so the way I think about it now is when I launched, it wasn't really the case, but today it is that an ETF is just another vehicle to allow your clients access to your investment strategy. It's not this otherworldly thing that's out there that's so different than anything else that's going on. It has these inherent advantages. It has an incredible trading advantage. One trade covers everybody at the instantly the same time. You have these incredible tax efficiencies that are inside of an ETF that you can defer any capital gains until the time it should be accounted for, which is when someone actually leaves, not when you're doing trading. An amazing advantage. You have operational efficiencies. You have all these things. Does every advantage stack up as a total advantage overall against an SMA? Maybe not, but it's an alternate way to provide your investment strategy to your clients. And that's the way I think that the industry has shifted towards instead of it being like this, well, I have my business and then I have this thing called an ETF outside of my business. And I really don't want to mix the two because that might be a conflict of interest. No. Today, it's totally accepted that an advisor would create an ETF and utilize it as a tool for their wealth management practice. And a way to deliver their investment in a really smart way to their clients. And so that's what we want to be able to do and provide for our platform and for any advisor who would be interested.
Hey, that's fantastic. And as I listen to you and I reflect back on other conversations that I've had with bigger organizations, and they'll have a marketing staff of 15 folks, and they're at all the conferences and so on, and you wonder where they why they have to charge $400,000.
Yeah,
So they
that's
got to
true.
pay those marketing folks and so on. You don't need any of that. And
No.
you've taken a totally different approach and leaned it
Yeah.
out. So we've talked about how long the from day one to launch takes, and what other common questions do you get when a firm contacts you to discuss this possibility of embedding ETFs into their overall spectrum?
Oh, yeah. I'd say Man, that's really the biggest thing is I had a great conversation the other day with a guy who wants to do a faith-based ETF, and it's for a faith that is not really represented yet. And it was a great idea. And I'm working with him to make this to get to launch at this point. I loved it. And it wasn't my faith, but I love faith-based funds because I think people should have access to what they believe in and feel comfortable in the investment world to the extent that they can. It's very difficult, but at any rate, I really do like funds like that. So, but he came to me and he said, "Hey, I really want to do this, but I have seed money. I've got all these other advisors who want to do this that share my faith." I was like, "Okay, well, I know you have. I know this person. I was like, you have a nice business. What you could almost do this on your own." He's like, "Oh no, I can't because I charge, upwards to 1.75% of to my clients, and I can't lose that to what would be maybe an investment management fee of 95 basis points because I can't take that hit." I'm like, "Oh, well, time out. Like, there's no such thing as taking a hit. It's just a matter of documentation and disclosure." Like everybody on this podcast is going to be nodding their head right now and say, "Oh yeah, that's if you document and disclose what you're doing, which is perfectly regulatory fine in this space to do it this way." Then, which the thing that I find is the hiccup is that shouldn't be is that in your practice, if you charge 1.75, that's fine, and you it just be round numbers, and you charge 1% investment management fee, and let's just say out of that investment management fee, you're collecting 85 basis points of it. Then, let me make the math easier. You're collecting 75 basis points. So there's a full 1% difference between your advisory fee and your ETF, what you're making there. Well, you just charge your advisory fee down to 1% now. You don't charge the whole 1.75 on those assets. You just charge. So you're always equal. You never have to take a hit. And so I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions is that when I launched 5 or 6 years ago, there was like a lot of hand-wringing about that. But there is not anymore. That's done. There's no pushing the envelope. There is no confusion. You are allowed to utilize an ETF as an investment tool for your clients as long as you disclose that you're receiving revenue from it and you balance that accordingly for your normal fees. And so in that way, and I would tell you, it was one of those moments he's like, "Wait, what?" Because he had it in his head. So there's
Yeah,
no
I
way
could
I
see
can
where
charge
that
my
would be.
clients. It feels like double dipping, right? But now there's a little bit of work that goes into it, the disclosures and all that. But one, that's sometimes a barrier that people have in their head that doesn't really exist. Two, I think the barrier that can exist sometimes that we want to make sure we're working correctly through is that I think you might remember earlier in my story, I said when I launched three. And what I did is I had a conservative, what I call like a core and a growth. And I would combine those three to make portfolio risk portfolios. Because what you don't really want to do, and I'd say it's not really accepted yet, although it could be one day for sure, is you don't want to take like a growth SMA strategy and say, "Well, this will be my ETF." And anybody that was in that growth, which was probably like a 80-20 or 90-10, was a whatever, and you put in there because it had lots of constituents in it, and optically it looked great. You could do that inside an ETF; it would actually work beautifully well. But the problem comes in to say now you're putting all it looks like you're putting all your eggs into one basket, and I'd say that's where when I do my
You're talking
initial,
about from a compliance standpoint, the SEC
yes,
looking over the shoulder of where are you,
compliance.
where were you before, and now you're moving client assets into this other structure.
So let's be really clear about that. So there's a really dedicated way that you could take an SMA and turning it into an ETF, and you can transfer the assets. You can even do it super tax efficiently. So it's not that that's a regulatory problem to do it. It's just that when for me, and this is the part that I would agree with, sometimes I will say, "Hey, we're creating our own perception here," but on this in optics, but on this one, we've spent our entire life telling our clients, "Don't put all your eggs in one basket." And then if you put them into one ETF, as much as you explain, "Oh no, inside that ETF, I'm doing all this stuff," that could be kind of a hard pill to swallow. And I think that's where sometimes I say, if you have a more a strategy that can be more like as a part of a sleeve, sometimes that's better. Now I have advisors that have done this, but I think the best way to do is if you have a strategy that's already kind of a sleeve of a broader strategy, that's the best way to do an ETF. You probably don't want to take your growth SMA, turning it into an ETF, and then putting everybody into that one ETF. And for lots of reasons. And that's a barrier that I see that I can't really
Yeah,
overcome,
so a lot
right?
of thought processes that goes on. Yeah,
And so those are things
a lot
that
of
we
thought
definitely
process.
talk through too.
Yeah, and you've had that experience where you could weigh out for that advisor and designing out his thought, helping him with his thought process, and then designing something that fits him and helping him avoid some of those misconceptions. Just like that gentleman, that firm you're talking to, 1.75%. I can't take the hit. Well, there's not a hit to take as long as you think through it. Because every ETF he's using is, they have their expenses as well.
That
So,
one was great, real quick, Nick, because there was probably three or four barriers, including, hey, we got to be really mindful of expense ratio, which everybody says. And I will push back a lot on that. I'm very challenging on that because I find that the expense ratio has more bandwidth than most people might think. But I conceded that in his case, I thought he might be correct. And we worked through ways to make the expense ratio lower in really good regulatory sound ways that work really well, that if you believe you're going to have the AUM eventually, that you can kind of reimburse yourself. You can keep your expense ratio low in the beginning and then reimburse yourself fees that you didn't collect at that point. I mean, so there are really unique situations and we're good at being helping people get through those. We're not a, in that way, we're not, I wouldn't like the term turnkey because we're very consultative and help people get through a lot of their barriers. The two that I presented was one, it was like, hey, one's overcomable and one's really you've got to be thoughtful about it. How are we going to overcome it? I found there's six or seven things that we can talk through to say we can get you through this if it's something like, just real quick. I just said it, expense ratio. People get in their head about expense ratio and they're like, well, right now when I calculate my SMA, I am in low cost ETFs. And then to take someone out of that and put them into an ETF that would inherently have a higher expense ratio, I don't think I can do that. And so what we do is we provide this kind of a tangible documented calculation that shows where there's real drag in SMAs that has real impact, but nobody ever accounts for. So when you just look at one piece of the puzzle, sometimes it feels a little weighted towards the other one, but if you truly look at the whole picture and we help you dig into that and say, hey, there's a lot of drag on SMAs that don't maybe show up on a quote unquote expense ratio, but it is showing up on performance and it's more major than people give it credit for and really starts to balance out the full total picture. So we do things like that with advisors because we know it's a very, it's a tough decision. It feels like it's a lot to take on, which it can be in some ways. So we just are very consultative is how I
okay,
would
well,
kind
that's
of
great because
sum
that's
it up.
what our advisors are in search of. So I think you displayed that in spades relevant to this is a Rubik's Cube. How do we design it out? How does it fit, really fit you? And so on. So Dan, we've covered a lot of territory in the last few minutes. And what's exciting is that, our advisors will be able to reach out to you now through your website and so on. But what final thoughts might you have as we wrap this up?
If you've ever thought about doing an ETF and whether you looked at it before and said, whoa, like our reaction, Nick, is like, this is too expensive, or you thought it was too
Well,
much of a
before.
burden, or you thought anything, I'd say just revisit it. And because a lot has changed, we're pretty unique in what we do. And it's pretty unlikely we've ever talked. So, and my, you could probably tell just from this podcast, I'm very happy being consultative, with people. I don't feel like I had somebody call me the other day that was this MIT graduate that's not in our industry at all, said, I've got this incredible strategy. And, fine. I talked to him. I had to tell him, you're not a candidate. You have no AUM. He didn't know what the term AUM meant. So I was like, yeah, you're probably not going to work. But for advisors in your network, I am here and happy to provide time to let you know if this can work. And whatever experience you've had and or you've had no experience, it's a real legitimate wealth management tool for advisors today that you should explore if you have a strategy you feel pretty good about. And that's all I'd say is that just revisit it or really
Oh
consider
yeah,
it
you're
as
just
an
going to take a
interesting
low-key
way.
approach, and that's the beauty of
Yeah.
you and how you developed your platform, as
Yep.
opposed to some of the other conversations I've had where it's sales intensive, commission oriented. Let's do this, and it's going to be $400,000, and we want half up front and all the above. And
They're comfortable getting high
you've been a real
fees.
fresh breath there,
Yeah,
but
thanks. They're
yeah,
comfortable
so.
getting high fees because they, and I hate to say this, they don't care if you fail or succeed because they're going to get their money no matter
It's
what.
similar
That's
to
not how
other
I operate.
concepts that we work with, like ESOPs. They want to charge a
Yeah.
$50,000 assessment fee to determine whether or not it fits the
Right.
manufacturing firm. And at that point, they don't care whether it's implemented or not. So anyway, we've covered a lot
Yes.
of territory. So I appreciate it, Dan. And so in conclusion, I hope you gain more insight into how you can utilize our wealth engineering hub and the other entities that make up my family of companies in coordination with Dan and ETF Create and the rest of our expert sourcing team to gain more success and control within the wealth management arena. Now, you can learn more about ETF Create and Dan by visiting etfcreate.com. That's etfcreate.com. And you can, where right on the website, you can schedule a meeting with Dan and you can brainstorm your thoughts and get more of a feel for how Dan approaches this, in theory, complex endeavor. That you can reach Dan directly at dmohr@morecapitalmanagement.com. That's D and then MOHR. That's Dan's last name, dmohr@morecapitalmanagement.com. And finally, the core website for my family of companies is mywehub.com. Again, thank you, Dan, for participating in our PowerCast. And thanks to all of those listening in. Have a great day.
Thanks, Nick.